auckland.org.au/volunteer.
Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone, 2020, and this is a recording I'm doing in the January period, so I'm still in New Year mode, and so I hope that you're enjoying so far final weather. It's a bit cool this week, but we've had some lovely days, and it is summer, and it's time to be outdoors, and I know that lots of people are getting out and enjoying that outdoor activity with their families or friends. So I'm just looking ahead at Senior Focus for the year, and I know towards the end of last year I was talking about things that we're going to do this year, but I have three things to announce right now. One is the applications for the seniors panel at Auckland Council for people who want to be part of the conversations that advise the council on what seniors' needs are. Those applications are open now and they close on the 10th of February. So if you can put Seniors Panel Auckland Council into Google, or you can go to www.careersaucklandcouncil/seniorspanel, all lowercase, and that should get you there. they will give you information about how the panel operates, its monthly meetings, that there is an honorarium. It's not really a salary, but it does contribute something towards your costs of getting into those meetings, and that there could be some reading and background study required before you get to those meetings. So for those who are interested, you've got till the 10th of February to get that application in. Now, the second thing I want to mention is the cuts to archives. So just before Christmas, we had announcements and people were circulating on Facebook information about these cuts and how they're going to severely restrict access to those people that travel down to Wellington to access the archives to do research. And while that's not all of us, by any measure means this, but there are people who do tremendous work, often detailed and painstaking over quite a number of years, in fact, and who make regular visits to the archives. And they're going to find it really difficult because the hours being cut back to, say, 4 hours a day means that you might travel to Wellington, but you can't actually use your whole day down there doing the work because the hours are so restricted. So there is a petition circulating. You can write to MPs. This is something where pressure needs to be put on to government. Otherwise, it will just happen in the dead of night. And the third area I wanted to talk about is emergency management, because disasters in Australia with the bushfires have highlighted the importance of being well connected in your community. So those people along the southeast coast who've done very well in terms of coping with the disaster, they've just proven how valuable such community contacts are. And those communities where people are well connected, they rise to the occasion and they also recover faster and more smoothly. I was noting myself the tremendous work being done by a pharmacist on the south coast, close to Batemans Bay, with a small pharmacy servicing a small community that has no doctor. And of course people lose their medicines, and you know, when the house goes up and burns down and everything goes, their medication's gone as well. So he was travelling to, even though he was homeless himself, had lost his own home and was in emergency accommodation, he was travelling to the pharmacy each day to open up to get people their medication. And of course no power, so he wasn't able to use any machinery to take credit cards or FPOS machines or anything like that. So no power, there was no way of recording a lot of the transactions, and consequently he was in fact having to give the medication in good faith that he would be paid later. But that's the sort of community he's in. He's in a community where people do things out of love and goodwill, and he was paying back his community in kind and being very supportive of them, even though he was in his own situation of homelessness. So that's just a really good example of the kind of calibre of person that steps up in that kind of context. So why did I bring up emergency management for us? Because it's like we're not coping with bushfires, but this is a good time for us to focus in on, well, what do we need to have in place to cope well in an emergency? What's important to us? And one thing that's been highlighted with the bushfires is animal welfare, because, of course, we know that there's a billion animals suffered and been extinguished in the whole raging fire situation in Australia. But what we haven't been aware of is the lack of planning nationally for disaster management, for how we care for and deal with the welfare issues for animals. Now we haven't, suddenly we've now got a horse management plan for coping with disasters. We didn't have a horse management plan until the Australian bushfires came up, and that sort of drove that urgency, and that went through late last year when the fires weren't quite so bad at that stage. But during the Christchurch earthquakes, we had a lot of problems with animal management, and I recall being on the front line and one day being stopped while I was trying to have a lunch break, and a woman, most distraught, was trying to tell me about this horse that she thought the SPCA were going to put down and that would cause her father to have a heart attack. So she was really, really concerned. And when I did inquiries, I found out the horse was about 80 kilometres away, quite unable to be dealt to by anything that we had in place. But I was fortunately, through my contacts with the SPCA, able to resolve this issue and get someone else to actually go out the 80Ks, visit her father and get him a food box, as well as repair his broken window and make sure he had heating, and because it was actually quite cold. And he was encouraged to participate with the SPCA in the assessment they were going to do of the horse. They were going to pay for a vet to do the full assessment and then make a decision about what had to happen, so that it wasn't done arbitrarily or in any way inhumanely. And it just brought home to me how important it is that animals are family members. And so it is very, very stressful for people, and how important it is to have some sort of a management plan that actually prioritises who will do what and what will be covered and how it will be managed. So we now have a horse management plan for New Zealand, but there are other species, other animals that we aren't so well off, we haven't got a plan for, and I think that's an important, urgent thing. But coming back to ourselves, we can all be responsible for our own pets. We can decide what sort of emergency kit we need for our pets, so that, you know, if we get to have to leave the property in a hurry, we can take the animal and a kit for the animal, which might include their medications and so on. For ourselves, we probably need two or three kits. We probably need a kit for our car. We probably need, incidentally, it's a good idea to have it in a small backpack under your front seat, not at the back, where if you get hit from behind and the boot can't be opened, it becomes very difficult to retrieve the pack when you need it. So something that fits under the front seat is ideal. But in your house, you need something, I think, close to your exit way, where you can just grab it and go. So somebody said today to me when I was talking about this, but if it's downstairs and you're building gets full of water or rubble, it won't be much use to you. So it depends where you're actually living in the home and where you spend the most time. It may be better to have it on the upper floor, and after all your means of escape might be off a balcony, off a ladder or something. It might not be out the front door down below. So you've got to think things through and work out what's your best strategy, what is most likely to happen under which circumstances, and actually think through all the different options as you're planning. But certainly it's important to have supplies that you keep in your home so that if there is an emergency, there's a run on things at the supermarket, you actually have enough to keep you going for a couple of weeks, because that's what the government says. 2 to 3 weeks is what you need to cater for yourself before emergency people can be expected to come in and support you. So having your own kit in your own cupboard, in your own pantry, your emergency food is fine, but something I've noticed is that people leave it there a long time and then it passes the use-by date. So periodically you actually have to eat the emergency food and replace it so that it actually stays fresh and it is in reasonable condition for you to use it in a real emergency. I think also probably the number one thing that people don't do well enough, because I know a number of seniors are really very well organised, and I've come across at least 50% in meetings who have got emergency kits there, and they've got 2 or 3 and they've got them and they know where they are. They've got other people informed about them, and they also have got a plan in place. But I also know at least 50% of the meetings don't have any planning at all. So it's more, I guess, people who kind of think it won't happen to them, or, you know, we don't have disasters in New Zealand, although I think that most people realise we do now, since we've had Christchurch and Kaikoura and Ward and White Island. You know, we actually have had a number of floods, a number of situations where seniors have been evacuated in quite large numbers. I think we've got sufficient happening at least once or twice a year to make people need to really take this seriously. But going back to my original point, the thing that people fall down on often is the plan. So, yes, they've got the kit and everything else, but they haven't worked out a plan of what they'll do or who they'll communicate with. And one woman I was talking to said, "Oh well, I'll ring you." You know, I said, "Well, hang on a minute. You might not be able to ring me because the power might be out. Secondly, I'm a long way away. You're not going to be able to walk to me on foot. I may not be able to drive to you, and I may not know that there's anything wrong. I may have other people on my plan that I have to deal with. So let's get real about this. If you haven't talked it through and you haven't worked out the practicalities, it won't necessarily happen. It won't work in the real situation. I know when I've been travelling, particularly in third world countries where things can be happening rather abruptly and there can be sudden changes in transportation and weather and so on, I've always had a plan in that situation. And the plan was not to go backwards if I was separated from my partner. The plan was always to go to the destination that we were en route to get to, that we'd meet up when we got to the destination. And that did happen. You know, there was a disaster, and it was I won't go into that story, but I will just say that I did a complete train trip on my own, not sure what the outcome would be, not sure whether my partner would be alive, or not, or injured, because he'd fallen from the train and we didn't know where he'd landed. So I got to Churchgate Station in Mumbai and I waited, and fortunately there was a family on the train who waited with me, which I was very grateful for, and the story went very well in the end, but it was quite a scary business. Now, whatever happens in life, if you've got a plan and you've actually thought the plan through, you're far better prepared than if you have no plan. And if you want other people to help you, or you want other people to be able to contact you, then you've got to share that plan. You really actually have to take other people into your confidence, not just assume that they're going to be around or that you're going to come looking for them. No, it's got to be worked out, it's got to be talked through, and it's got to be known and understood and shared with more than one person. And preferably, you'll have two or three people involved in that plan so that, you know, you can really think that, this is actually going to practically work and be confident about it. I think that we do take a lot for granted in New Zealand. We have a very good life here, and life is a lot less stressful than it is in a lot of other places. So therefore, we're inclined to think we'll be okay, we can rely on so-and-so, or, you know, and just be very casual about it. I think, though, that the world is changing, and the evidence is upon us that we need to be very mindful, and we need to be much more prepared, and we need to also think that in a changing environment, maybe things that we rely on every day won't necessarily be working, and we need to really get our heads around what would be the most satisfactory, what would be the way that would really be meaningful and practical. And that's why we get back to neighbours and the importance of knowing people that live close by, people that you can walk to in a matter of a few metres. They don't have to be your best friends, but they may be your best allies in this kind of situation. So once a year we have Neighbours Day, and so this year I'll be doing a program around Neighbours Day in the lead up to it, with suggestions about things that you can do on Neighbours Day to better connect with the people in your street. It's school holidays at the moment, and that's a time where quite often people spend more time with their grandchildren, people connecting up with their nieces and nephews and their children and so on. And it gives you opportunities to do things that you perhaps wouldn't do in the normal school year. Like you might take a ferry trip to Devonport. And why Devonport? Because they have a fantastic library. And often kids like to go to libraries these days. They're wonderful places, not like the libraries that I had growing up, where the lino was brown on the floor and there was hardly any lighting, so you could hardly see the names and the titles of the books and the authors. Very dingy, dismal place the library was locally, and I had to walk there because there was no connecting bus. And so it was a big excursion to a rather dingy brown hole. Nowadays, kids have great libraries that they can visit, and it's really good to visit other libraries that perhaps you don't go to normally. You can still return books in those other libraries. But the Devonport Library has won a lot of awards, including an International Architects Award, and it's particularly exciting. And it's by the water, and there's great fish and chips, and general sort of playground associated with it, so that there's plenty to be done and enjoyed, and it's a great outing. But there's more to school holidays than just that. I mean, there's places like Motet where you could get free entry with your gold card, and you can actually show these young people old telephones. And, of course, they can have fun working out how to work them. the rules, and you can demonstrate and tell stories. There's many, many things you can share, and the kids are fascinated. They love hearing the stories of what you experienced and how you found things and used things. And it really comes to life. It's so much more exciting than their parents taking them. So I really would recommend that you take advantage of MOTAT, you take advantage of the ferries, and of course there's quite a lot of free activities around Auckland Anniversary Day, and the Ports of Auckland has an open day. There are opportunities to go out on the tugboats. There's so much that takes place in Auckland in late January that it's a really exciting place to be. So I would recommend that you plan ahead and that you work out things to do, because the end of the holidays can be a bit tiresome and everyone can get a bit tired and a bit ratty. But if you turn it into an adventure and have a few fun outings to look forward to, then you can really have a lot of fun. Now, I think it's time for a music break, and I've chosen a track, Persuasion, off one of my favourite albums, which is Together in Concert. It's a live Tim Finn, Big Ronga and Dave Dobbin album. So I'll listen to the music and I'll be back with you shortly.
Tempted by the promise of a different life, time has fled. There's a constant battle running through my head. I don't know what to do, 'cause I still believe.
Presenter for Senior Focus today. Now, just looking ahead, what's coming up, we have Waitangi Day, of course, in February, and I'm just going to make a suggestion here that a lot of people have said to me recently, we should really go to a local marae. It'd be good to go as a group. And they weren't quite sure what to do, who to contact and how to do it. Now, a number of local marae's in the Auckland area advertise within Our Auckland, which comes out, the February version will be out soon. There will be details about what time to arrive at the main gate of the marae. There will usually be a link to a map, or you can find out from your local library, and or you can go on the council website. But certainly the marae in East Auckland, Ngāti Whātua's marae at Ōrākei, that's Bastion Point. That marae is definitely open to the public, and they have a very warm welcome and a very well-designed program, which is usually kicked off by their seniors. So their seniors, Kuia and Kaumātua group, Te Rōpū, known as Te Puru or Tāmaki, they are great performers. They perform on stage regularly, so they actually do the welcome musical numbers, the Waiata and the Waiata Aranga. And then there will be other performances by young children, by teenagers. You know, it's quite varied, and it's not all music, because they have stalls and they have a lot of educational things going on and opportunities for people just to walk around and sit on the grass and eat lovely food. So it's definitely worth going. And Hauani Waititi, the marae out west from Pars Road, you get to it, they have a good car park and so on. That's also open, and they also have a proper program. So most of them start about 10 o'clock and they go through into the mid-afternoon, if not the late afternoon. Now, there are other marae that do things throughout the region, so I'm not going to list them all or talk about them all, but I know that your local library will know what's on, but I know that Our Auckland will give some details as well. Now, this year is an important year for seniors in Auckland, because seniors' needs, particularly around access, transport and housing, will be being worked on on a number of fronts. But the council has committed to developing its plan under the UN umbrella of Age Friendly, and that plan is still to appear. There's been consultation around what should be in it, but now it's being actually formulated and put together, and I would imagine somewhere about June we will start to see the draft version. So that's something we're going to be talking about this year, and also the Gerontology Society of New Zealand will be having their conference in April. I'll be reporting on that, and we'll have some new presenters coming in to assist us, and I'll be also looking into the 75th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima in August. So it's going to be an exciting year, And I look forward to having you with us, and your company is very valued. Thank you.